Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Chad, we now live in a world in which Carrie Fisher is no longer a part of.
Yeah.
This is sad news, but it also means that while we are past the points of mourning and Prozac pill-shaped urns and all the craziness that has gone along with the deaths of these two wonderful women and wonderful actresses, we can now think about the future and what the implications for this for Carrie Fisher's passing will have on the Star Wars universe. So we found out that while Luke and Leia were fairly certain get reunited in Episode 8, she was supposed to have a large role in Episode 9. Her role in Episode 8 was finished. Obviously, Episode 9 is still in pre-production phase with Trevorrow. It's pretty far down the road. We're in 2017 now. That's a 2019 film. We're 2 years out. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to start shooting sometime in October.
Yeah.
So, word has come about that next week there will be a summit at Lucasfilm outside of San Francisco, and a meeting will take place, and the brass will decide how to move forward. Your thoughts on the fact that Princess Leia was supposed to have a larger role in 9, what that might mean for the story of Kylo Ren, and what her death might mean for what they're going to do with 9?
Hearing that, my first thought was that, you know, the speculation that Leia might not make it out of Episode 8, that kind of put the whole kibosh on that.
Which we wouldn't have known had this not happened.
Yeah. They haven't said anything about this movie. This is the most we've gotten about this movie. We actually know that Leia is going to be reconciled with, or meet back up with Luke, and that she's going to have a meeting with Kylo. A meeting that apparently she survives because she was supposed to be a large part of 9. From hearing that and that she's going to be a large part of 9, kind of, I don't know if it was going to be the Kylo redemption story, which, you know, Star Wars seems to do with their dark guys towards the end. But it would probably heavily influence Kylo's story. So, I'm interested to know where they want it to go, but I have no idea where they're going to go.
So for me, there are only two answers to this question. Either one, you do a Peter Cushing, and you have her completely CGI character. They're going to have to work on the effects because they weren't very good on the Leia proportion.
No.
Or you recast. No woman in her 60s in Hollywood is going to want that role.
No, and they're not going to want that. And I don't like the Peter Cushing role either. I was not offended by it when I saw Rogue One because I actually had no idea it was coming. It feels different for Leia because, I don't know, because it's Carrie Fisher. And I know we got a bit of it in Rogue One.
Which she was pleased with. She was very happy with the way that turned out.
But.
And hers was way worse than Cushing's.
Cushing, yeah. But you can tell they put a whole lot of time into Cushing's, right, and not so much into hers. So if they put time into it for this one, I'm sure it'll be at least on that level. But, I mean, maybe it's because we actually had her in this next set of trilogy, well, this trilogy here, and to not have her and then go the CGI route, it just feels wrong. But if Leia, if there's not another way to get to where they want to go with the story without Leia, then they might have to go that route.
Well, to me, with Kylo, there were only two ways you could go. You could either go and embrace the fanboy hatred of him for the sin that he committed against the Star Wars cinematic universe by killing his father, and just have him just whack his mother and then whack his uncle and just go on and make him the worst mass murderer in the history of the Star Wars franchise. Or you do what they've always done with Anakin and Kylo potentially, and do the redemption story and have the mother bring him back to the light. So it seemed he had daddy issues, not mommy issues.
Yeah. I don't think they should go the redemption route just because, you know, that's what everybody's expecting. And I don't think people are going to forgive him because he killed Han Solo. And I think that might be the unforgivable sin.
Which is why I abdicated for just going full on, like, deranged person and just like, I'm going to kill every member of my family.
I mean, that would further the theme if he's the one responsible for killing all the original three. But
and then that just puts more emphasis on him and Rey's final battle at the end. Like, please kill this dude. Please kill this dude.
A part of me doesn't want him to do that just because, like, how everybody complains that Star Wars eventually comes back into this loop. It just feels like if he's the one to kill him, it kind of continues that loop thing. I mean, he can kill two out of the three. But I don't think he should kill all three. I think Leia's the one that, if he's not going to kill anybody, Leia's the one that he shouldn't kill. I'm not saying she shouldn't die. I'm just saying he shouldn't kill her. It's really hard to answer where they should go because we don't know. If this was after episode 8, we'd have a better picture of where they're trying to go. And then we could say, yeah, maybe you can do like a Paul Walker thing to, like, you know, send her off and not have to have her in the whole movie. But this really could be this integral into where Kylo's got to go, and we can't do that. I'm hoping that they can work a way around it.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall at Lucasfilm.
I know. I don't like, there's a part of me that doesn't want to know where it's going because I want to be surprised with the movies. But there's a part of me that's just like, how are y'all going to fix this? I just want to know the mechanism of how are you going to fix it. That's going to be interesting. And
should we wait for black smoke or white smoke to emanate from the Lucasfilm offices?
You've seen how they've done everything so far. We know nothing.
Nothing. It's the most anticipated film by Fandango. You know, Fandango did their annual poll, and it is Episode 8 was the most anticipated film of 2017, and we don't even have a title.
Nothing.
Disney put out they have that big tech convention going on right now. Disney had a panel. They put out a whole bunch of pictures for a whole bunch of their different properties that are coming out in 2017. That's where this Thor Ragnarok synopsis that we'll get to a little bit later came from. And the picture that they brought for Episode 7, 8 was just Star Wars and Episode 8 through the middle of it. Like, we know nothing. As we have discussed on this podcast, we will probably not know nothing until we get to April, to Orlando, to Star Wars Celebration. And we'll have a panel, and it'll be streamed online, and we will all cry manly tears.
I'm carefully watching this marketing because Adam Driver has said, you know, he wishes that they can do Episode 9 and not have any trailers at all. And, you know, the internet has been like, yeah, why not do that? And really, the way they're going with this with 8, we're not getting anything till April. It'll probably be 30 seconds and we're going to lose our minds and still not know a goddamn thing. So if they do that for April and we know nothing, and then they give us an October and they give us an action trailer and we still know nothing, why not just not have a trailer? Everybody's going to go see it anyway.
That was all of our conversations, right, when JJ got the job. Like, there's no way you can keep the mystery box going. This is Star Wars. I mean, and I think that, you know, I'm waiting now for the official announcement they're going to move the young Han Solo movie to December. Because I think Lucasfilm has a firm idea now that they've released Rogue One, and it's now, as of this moment, the second highest grossing movie of 2016. Right. It will soon be the highest grossing movie of 2016. and it doesn't have a... It only has one Skywalker in it, and he's in it for all of about a minute and a half. So...
They said this week that it's not coming out in May. They just hadn't said anything else.
They're putting it in.
Yeah, they're going to put it in. As soon as they said that...
I love the fact they had to make up the BS excuse about, we need more time on the special effects shots for 8, and that's why we're moving episode 8 to December. And it's like, no. You just made $750 million in 13 day in $730 million in 18 days with Force Awakens.
Like, weren't they, like, in the middle of shooting 8 when 7 came out?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, no. That was 2 years. Like, when 7 came out, that's 2 years. Well, if they kept it in May, that's a year and a half. They're already almost done shooting. So they have over a year to do all the post-production stuff. Guess what? It might take a long time, but it doesn't take a year and a half to get that out.
No, I think the way that the schedule worked was they started filming 8 in February of this year, of 16, and then wrapped production in, like, May of 16. I want to say, like, May or June of 16.
So they still would have had a year to get it out in May, which is quite doable.
Especially when you own your own effects house.
Yeah. You're Disney. You have more money than God. You do whatever you want. So, yeah, this move had nothing to do with special effects and everything to do with December, we own you. You might as well change the month. If it was for Christmas, we might as well just change this to Star Wars month. Forget December, just write Star Wars every year.
I mean, and it's appropriate because even in the 10 years since the prequels, you know, the Revenge of the Sith was 2005. Summer's completely changed since what it was even when the prequels were coming out. You now have about a 2-week window to make as much money as possible. Your opening weekend domestically is a huge chunk of what your overall end of run take is.
At least half.
Right. So why would you want to put yourself in that position when you can come back out in December, everybody's going to run from you, including freaking Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Spielberg moved Ready Player One because he knew they were going to move 8. So, like, it's fine if Hugh Jackman wants to put out The Greatest Showman on Earth 2 weeks later, right? But acknowledge the fact that other studios are going to pull back. Other studios are going to clear the path because they don't want to end up like Sisters. And they don't want to end up like Assassin's Creed.
I think Assassin's Creed is a better one. Sisters, for what it was, it made money. But Assassin's Creed...
It did about a little bit less. Like, it was, I think, a $34 million opening or a $30 million opening that weekend. It might have done in the 50s if Star Wars wouldn't have been there. But, I mean... Sisters didn't have the star power of Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. So, like, it and John Cena. So it had, you know, so they had star power to draw in. They also had the benefit of counter programming, yes. You know. So they survived. Assassin's Creed did not.
No. Well, that also has to do with the fact that Assassin's Creed...
Quality, too. But yes, but other, like... We're sitting here, we're getting ready for the second weekend of January. There's nothing coming out. It's going to win the box office again. It's going to become the highest grossing movie of 2016 this weekend. Mm-hmm. It has a legitimate chance now at potentially ending up over $500 million domestically. Which is insane. 460, 480, 500 isn't out of the realm of possibility. Yeah. That's insane. And that's for a movie that is not featuring Rey, Finn, Poe, or Kylo, or Luke Skywalker, or General Leia, or...
We got one lightsaber in this sucker.
Right.
For a minute.
Right.
Less than a minute, one lightsaber. That's why I go to Star Wars movies for. I go for lightsabers. I got one, 30 seconds. It was the best 30 seconds of my life.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the results of that summit are. So, so Chad, moving on to the world of DC. Ben Affleck having second thoughts about directing the Batman? Wondering if his schedule's going to accommodate it? Wondering if Warner Brothers can throw some more money his way after he lost the money on Live by Night?
So, this story. So, if you don't know, Affleck's been promoting Live by Night for the past month. And for the past month, people have asked him, of course, about the Batman. And the beginning of December, it was, the script's not done yet. If it's not done right, you know, can't do it. And then, like, 2 weeks later, he's like, yep, we're ready to go. We'll be shooting sometime next year, blah, blah, blah. Fanboys rejoice. And then this week, he's like, look, we don't even have a script. And if it's not good, I'm not going to do it. I'll just walk away. And the internet is ablaze. Again. And everybody's wondering, what does this mean? That Affleck, like, he just said he had a script, and now he's saying he doesn't have a script. And he just said that they were going to do it, and now he's saying that nothing's together, so they can't do it. What is going on with Warner Brothers? What's going on with this movie? And this all brings me to a very, very, very sad place. Because, you know, it's contrary to popular belief, we don't hate DC. I particularly love DC. If you go to my house right now, it's covered with DC comics and new ones. So I spend lots of money on DC. But this is like emblematic of what is wrong with the DC movies. And I've come to the realization that I'm going to keep hoping that they're good. I want them to be good. As much as Batman vs. Superman pissed me off, I watch it all the time. When I tell you all the time, I will go on the guy to see if it's coming on just to watch it. And I've seen it, like, the day before.
And you have disturbed problems,
Chad. Yeah, I do. Because it infuriates me. There's parts of this movie I'm just, like, completely incensed, but I sit there and still watch it. But until Warner Brothers, the studio, figures out, gets a handle on these DC properties, chances are this is what we're going to have to go through every time. And it's they'll never have the cohesiveness of Marvel because they don't know what to do with these things. It's a great studio for movies, except when it comes to this, because they can't seem to get out of their own way. And I guess it goes...
But Chad, the Messiah has arrived. Geoff Johns has been given full creative power and influence and was able to write Wonder Woman.
Well, if you remember, so Affleck's line this week was, he doesn't have a script. The scripts, they have no script. Who's writing the script?
Well, I wouldn't... That would be Geoff Johns.
No. It's not just Geoff Johns. It's Geoff Johns and Ben Affleck. So if the writer is telling you, I don't have a script, dude, you're writing it. Why the hell don't you have a script? So in that statement, there's a whole bunch of different things we can like pick at.
Do you not think that this could just simply be a world-weary man on a press tour who gets asked the same questions over and over and is jet-lagged and tired? I mean, we got Daniel Craig saying he'd rather slit his wrist than play Bond again, and then now he's fully on board for Bond 25. I mean, people say things on press tours that they don't necessarily mean because they're tired and jet-lagged.
But it's...
Wildly inconsistent?
It is wildly inconsistent, but in this particular case, I mean, Daniel Craig says that he is James Bond, but at the end of the day, he can, like, go off and do something else, and people are like, okay, whatever. In this particular case, this is the writer, director, and star of the movie. All three things in one person telling you nothing is done. And
this is in contrast to Alfred and Joe Mangiello saying, we're going to start filming in April.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons has talked about. Everybody has talked about this movie, like, as it's coming on the horizon. One of the
Warner Brothers
execs has said the movie's a year and a half out, which he said this after Ben's comments, which still jives with what we know. Shooting it this year, it comes out sometime next year. The following year, it's about a year and a half. So, yes, he could just be jet lagged and saying this, but I don't think it's the case. I don't think this means the movie's not happening. I don't think this means the movie is not going to start this year. I think both of those things are going to happen. I do think that there are some issues behind the scenes, and that's kind of what worries me, because Warner Brothers has been, you know, Warner Brothers realizes that their golden goose is Ben Affleck. But if they know that, and they're still meddling in some kind of way, or worse yet, Ben Affleck and Jeff Johns don't agree and aren't seeing eye to eye, that's even worse. But something's going on behind the scenes that we don't know. And this is his little shot across the bow at, look,
I will walk away from this.
I don't even have to walk away from this. Look, I just said this, and you see this blaze behind me? Do you want that? Shut up. Get out of my way.
I am the one bright beacon of hope that you have for your DCEU. I'm the one thing universally that everybody liked out of Dawn of Justice.
Yep.
I am the leader of the Justice League. Per Zack Snyder. I am the one rounding everybody up and bringing everybody together.
Whatever. Okay.
I am the glue. And you want me to walk away.
You don't want to give me what I want. I can walk away. I'm good. People are going to hate you for letting me walk away. They're not going to hate me because they love me as Batman. Even when you set the internet ablaze by hiring me, now look at where I'm at. Everybody wants to see me put this suit on. So give me what I want and get out of the way. But my hope is that it's just the higher execs are fidgety and are trying to do stuff, and he's saying, get out of my way. Now, if he and Jeff Johns are having issues, that's a whole other thing, and I don't know if I like anything about that.
Well, if that's the case, then the comics guy is telling the Batman fanboy where to go. I mean,
But it's not just the comics guy, because they fed us this line, and until we see Justice League, Wonder Woman, and really Justice League, the line is Jeff Johns is in charge. So now he's the guy that we're trying to imagine as Kevin Feige. You're telling me that Ben Affleck's got a problem with not just the dude he's co-writing with, but the dude that the Kevin Feige,
the savior,
yes.
Which I mean, Feige. You know, the thing, Feige gets a bad rap, but, like, you know, he was, by all accounts, a defender of Edgar Wright and of Edgar Wright's vision, and it wasn't their issues that caused, you know, problems on Ant-Man. It was the Creative Council and the endless notes and the delays from that were giving Edgar headaches, and Edgar just couldn't handle and deal with it. So it wasn't like producer and director clashing. Yeah. But, I mean, Johns is supposed to be the savior, the architect, and I just see this as, it's crazy to me that it would be on a Warner Brothers executive level, because those are the executives, as we've talked about on this podcast before, who are so supportive of Paul Thomas Anderson and Spike Jonze, and, you know, applaud themselves as, or laud themselves as the Artur studio. So for them to do this to somebody who has brought them so much success. I mean, Argo, he gave them Argo, which gave them Academy Awards. Live by Night, while it is not as great as it could be, I personally, after doing some research and finding the supplemental materials, works better as a TV series on HBO than it ever would a movie. And I'm probably going to feel that way about Dark Tower. as well. Yeah. You know, this just works better as an HBO special. It's still getting some critical support. It's not going to be enough to get him in the Best Picture race, but it's going to be a good critical support. Why would you, if a guy has been red hot for three or four years for you now, why would you put pressure on him when you asked him to do this?
Maybe they're a little skittish because Live By Night isn't living up to, you know, his previous three movies. Which, everything I've heard about Live By Night, and while it might not be the greatest thing, it's still a good movie. And
it's a really good movie, but it's a really a lot of dense material and a lot of characters who are very compelling and very complex in the source material get boiled down to soft glance overs because there's not enough time in a 2.5 hour movie to fully explore their subplots. And, you know, the best way that I can explain it is, like, imagine taking an entire season's worth of plot threads of Boardwalk Empire and shoving them into 2.5 hours or 2 hours in 10 minutes.
That's
very hard to pull off in any kind of coherent manner, and a lot's going to get lost in the translation. And so that was kind of their problem. You know, Ben loved the material. It's great material. He wanted to do it justice. He does a great job in his part. There are people around him who do great, but, you know, it was just too much material for 2.5 hours.
Yeah,
and that's not on the director, it's not on the writer, it's just on the format. You know, when you're limited by time, I mean, for goodness sakes, I mean, one of the reasons the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Civil War work so well is because you've essentially had three seasons with Tony Stark and three seasons with Captain America over 10 years. And so you have spent a lot of time with these characters and gone with them on these emotional journeys through these three seasons. And now this is the finale, and you're waiting for that payoff. And that's why that moment in the trailer where it's like, you know, he's my friend, Tony. So was I. And it works well because you know, you've seen the two of them. Mm-hmm. And having just rewatched Age of Ultron not too long ago, you know, the roots of Civil War are right there in Age of Ultron because they actually start fighting each other in Age of Ultron. Shortly before the birth of Vision. So, I mean, I am okay with where they are. This is a movie that will happen, it will get done, and Affleck will have the clout to pull it off, and it will be the shining light. Like you've said on this podcast many times before, all of Arkham could burn down, the Batman movie is still going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, there is a third option to what could be going on, which is going to break my heart to say, but I've already said, you know, this is what I feel. It could be that, you know, Justice League is done, and he's like,
this is not going to help me.
Yes, this is a steaming pile. I need to abort. Abort now. Abort. That is also on the table. None of these things I'm presenting
There are no good scenarios here.
No. I mean, and it could be none of these scenarios. It could just be, I don't know.
I think the most plausible scenario is he's playing hardball to negotiate to get what he needs.
I think that's right. And out of the scenarios, it's the best scenario we have. So I hope it's none of the above. I hope his bed just got up on the wrong side of the bed, or that this interview was like done a month ago and just came out and nobody said anything different. That would be the best case scenario. But none of this is good. We gotta hope for the lesser of all these evils.
All right. So Chad, let's move on to something that gives you great joy. Ryan Coogler is putting together the greatest cast in the history of African American film.
Again, this we don't have video, so you can't see it. As soon as he said that, I just got this big grin on my face, because every time this movie comes up, I just get so happy. And everybody I know just like...
We're almost exactly a year out.
Like, this latest news, a lot of people don't know who this guy is. I do, because I watched the
People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
And his portrayal of Rodney.
Christopher Darden. Mm-hmm. It's Christopher Darden, the other prosecutor with Marsha Clark. He won an Emmy for that, and his name is Sterling K. Brown. We're kind of bearing the lead, but he got cast in Black Panther. They gave his character name, and I cannot remember, but he's somebody from T'Challa's past.
Which seems to be a recurring theme.
Yeah, and with everybody else that's coming out of his past, I'm going to assume that he's not... With him, I hope it's a good guy, because I like him, and he comes off as a guy that will be helpful to somebody. But with everybody else that's coming out to T'Challa's past in this movie, none of them is good. So I'm going to say he's probably
basically not good. I become the king. I become King T'Challa, and I become Black Panther and take on the mantle, and then everybody wants a piece of me.
Everybody's got a problem with me. They all come back right now. So this cast, I just said Sterling, he just won the Emmy for The People versus O.J. If you've got like 10 hours to kill, go ahead and watch it. I liked it.
I don't need to. I lived through it.
Well, I lived through it too, but there was still stuff in there that like, I didn't know. Or, so it played out that way. Granted, this is, you know, it is a story, so some of the things aren't necessarily true. But it's very entertaining, and it's like to see
these O.J. I got more out of O.J. Made in America than I did of The People versus O.J. Simpson.
That is a very good one too. That documentary is very good.
But I mean, if you're talking about Black Panther here, we got this guy. We got Angela Bassett.
Yes.
We've got Lupita Nyong'o. Uh-huh. We've got Ryan Coogler directing. We got Michael B. Jordan. Yeah. We've got
Forest Whitaker's in there.
We got Forest Whitaker. We've got Andy Serkis.
There's other people.
But unfortunately, the bigger thing about this is that I've noticed, we have not gotten any confirmation on Sebastian Stein.
Oh, I don't think we will. I think they'll just keep piling this on and be like, much like they're doing now with Doctor Strange, with Thor, we'll get to that. I think it'll be something like that. Like, if he's going to show up, they'll be like, oh, and the Winter Soldier's in here. Take that forever, what it's worth. And I'm just going to be like, I don't care. Because I keep beating this drum, but this is the largest Black cast over a tentpole film that's going to make so much goddamn money. This is going to be the large... It doesn't matter how much this movie makes. It's going to be the most money and a majority Black cast is made in one sitting. And it's going to be a superhero movie. And they're going to meet people... All these people that go and see it. And that is a very good thing. Representation for Black people matters, for other races matter, but it just opens it up, because like, I go to Toys R Us now, and there's like, a kid and his mom, and it's a little white boy, and he's like, I want Black Panther, and I'm just like, hot damn, what, this is the world I live in, and it's happened more than once, and I've just been sitting on the aisle, and I'll be like, and there's Black Panther, can I get Black Panther, and I'm just like, what is this, you didn't know what Black Panther was, a year ago, and now we got this, and then we're going to have this big movie, and next February, look, I'm partying from the time February starts until the time this sucker ends, because this is going to be great.
Assuming that the trailers don't just tamper all that enthusiasm and flush it down the drain.
I don't think they can. If they did, Marvel pretty much makes, like, safe or good trailers. It'd have to be like terrible. Like, you don't show the Black Panther at all. You find all the white people in the movie and you just put them in the trailer. and let them play football somewhere and be like, Black Panther coming. That's how you burn it down.
So, yes, I think we're all looking forward to the Wakandan leader's return to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in February of 2018. So another Marvel news. We got a two plot synopsises, one from D23's website and one from the big tech convention that was going on this week. One of them was straightforward and boilerplate, basically, and revealed what we've known for about a year and a half now, which was that we are going to get Planet Hulk. The official synopsis for Thor Ragnarok. In Marvel Studios' Thor Ragnarok, Thor is imprisoned on the other side of the universe without his mighty hammer and finds himself in a race against time to get back to Asgard to stop Ragnarok. The destruction of his home world and the end of the Asgardian civilization at the hands of an all-powerful new threat, the ruthless Helena. But first, he must survive a deadly gladiatorial contest that pits him against his former ally and fellow Avenger, the Incredible Hulk. That is your official synopsis for your Thor Ragnarok that came from the tech convention that was out in California this week. The other synopsis, which we do not have a copy of, was released through the D23 Club or D23 website and talked about Doctor Strange opening portals. So your thoughts on Strange possibly having a bigger role than what we expected, and on the synopsis for Thor Ragnarok?
On the Strange part, I was surprised that they mentioned him so much, and it seems like he's going to... I still don't think he's going to be in the movie that much, but he's in there much more than I thought he was. However, when you have the second synopsis talking about him opening portals, and if you've seen Doctor Strange... Okay, spoiler alert. At the end of Doctor Strange, he's talking to Thor, and he's talking about Loki. So, and if Thor and Loki are both on Earth, and Doctor Strange is opening portals, it seems to reason that they can't get off of Earth. They need to get there. They find Doctor Strange. He sends them somewhere. And I think that's the extent of him on the movie. And almost. Well, he'll open the portal for them to go. And, I mean, Hulk's got to come back at least. So he's got to open the portal for them to come back. So we'll probably see him twice. So his presence and what he does is not surprising. The fact that they're really saying it this far out kind of is. I thought it'd be more of a, you know, we find out later.
But the tag is there. The tag at the end of Strange is there. So you know, they've come out and said, okay, well, Watiti directed this. It has his kind of wit and humor to it. I mean, we know from the Ant-Man post-credits sequence, which is a scene shot for Civil War, that Feige just was sitting on set one day going, hey, that would make a good post-credits scene. And it's in the final movie. I mean, I think that Thor at Bleecker Street drinking endless beer with Doctor Strange is
in the movie.
In Ragnarok. So, I mean, the idea that Strange is in there is not a surprise. The idea that he's helping Thor and Hulk some kind of way is not a surprise. The fact that Thor ends up kicked out of Asgard and trying to get back to stop the Ragnarok. The fact that he's going to go to the gladiator planet, Sakaar, which, you know, Watiti himself had already confirmed, is not a surprise. I mean, the Planet Hulk stuff has been there from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel figured out, hey, we're not going to be able to make a Planet Hulk movie. Because if we do, A, we can't use Banner at all. And B, Universal gets all the money because they have the distribution rights. So, let's just squeeze Hulk into Thor Ragnarok. Because we have this long history that we are now going to play on of characters showing up in each other's comic books and or movies now. You know, Falcon shows up in Ant-Man. You know, Thor shows up in Ant-Man. You know, Hulk shows up in Thor.
And we're about to get Iron Man and Spider-Man.
Iron Man shows up in Spider-Man. Winter Soldier and Captain America show up in Wakanda for Black Panther. I mean, these things happen. I mean, that's the point of a cohesive cinematic universe. Part of the fun is team-up movies. And not just, you know, the giant team-up movie of the Avengers, but, like, you know, Iron Man and Spider-Man off on an adventure. Thor and Hulk off on an adventure. You know, Cap and Bucky off on an adventure. You know, it's, you know, not really a surprise that they're going down this route.
No.
I mean, I'm excited for it. I'm really ready for Kate Blanchett. I want to see as much of her performance as I can. I need to see her come out at Comic-Con or at D23 in that headdress. That would be nice.
If that's the first time we see in the headdress, I mean, the room would, like, literally explode. I don't know how you make her, like, really walk in that headdress. Because I imagine in the movie it's, like, oh, about an inch off her face. And in the, and then
the computers do the rest.
Yeah. Because that thing is stupid looking, to say the least. And I don't understand how you walk. She'd have to fall off. Like, her head would just break. Had to snap off.
So, I mean, it's interesting that they're at least confirming the elements of Planet Hulk, and they're not hiding much.
No. Like, the Hulk stuff, you know, they put that synopsis out. That's, we know all that
stuff. The Hulk armor at Comic-Con. I mean,
they're not hiding that. It was just, I mean, we're like 2 months removed from Doctor Strange's own movie.
Right.
And then for them to just...
But I think also they're kind of scared. I mean, I think it has created some worry on the internet that, hey, this is a lot of people. If you're talking about throwing Loki and, you know, Loki and Thor have unfinished business. I mean, the last time we saw Loki, he was sitting on the throne of Asgard, you know? You know, crazy hobo Odin is a thing. You know, we're going to have to get Odin off of Earth. I mean...
And you're introducing Bella, and we're thinking they're going to...
And Valkyrie.
Yes, Valkyrie. And we're thinking we're getting at least an Infinity Stone in this. So with all of that put together, why would you say Doctor Strange now?
By the way, is it possible that the entire first movie of Infinity War is just, fine, I'll do it myself? What if the entire first movie of Infinity War is just Thanos going around the galaxy collecting stones?
I wouldn't say that because I think he actually... You have to have the Avengers in the movie. And most of these stones are not in... They're not... Okay, so you have the one that...
Tesseract is on Asgard. That's been stated.
You have that.
The Aether is with the Collector in one of his collections right there with Adam Warlock's cocoon. The orb is on Nova Corps' base.
So
the Time Stone is in the middle of the New York Sanctum.
Okay, so...
Yeah, I'm forgetting one. That's... The Aether, the cube, the Aether, oh, Vision's head.
Yeah.
So all of them involve interacting with an Avenger or people from the Avengers camp. I mean, you have to interact with people from Asgard to get the cube. You have to interact with the Collector from Guardians to get a hold to the Aether. You have to interact with the Nova Corps in order to get the orb. You have to... You have to interact with Doctor Strange to get the Time Stone, and you have to interact with Vision to rip his head off. So,
okay, so to me, the way that works is that, like, Thanos gets the ones that are in Guardians territory first, so the Collector and the Nova Corps.
Right, because they're in the galaxy. He's already been established in that universe, that side of the universe.
Then he goes down to Asgard and has to beat up Thor and take that one. Then he comes down to Earth and gets Doctor Strange's, and by the time he gets to Vision, that's when everybody comes together, and then he kills Vision, or takes Vision's head off, and has all of them. The only problem with all of that is, to do all of that, the two people that that run this universe and have unresolved issues are Iron Man and Captain America, and you get to them at the very end. So they can do it, but I don't think they will, because they still have to resolve Cap and Tony, and I don't think that gets resolved early on in the movie. And I think you want to see those two early in the movie. But I do think that...
But I mean, at the same time, it's Call Me Maybe. So all that Tony really has to do is pick up the phone and call him and have a reason to call him. Yo, I got a big purple guy who just showed up in New York.
Yeah, he comes down, but as we've seen Tony in these movies, is he really just going to like let it go when he sees Steve?
No, they'll trade Winnie Banner as they're trying to protect the New York Sanctum.
I think they're going to do a little more than that. And the Russos have alluded that there'll be more than that. But I do think that this movie will bring everyone together. And I think they'll bring everybody together by the halfway point. And I think the halfway point is when Vision loses his head. But before that, I think he gets two of these stones before this movie starts.
So let's just throw Thanos into Thor Ragnarok. Why not?
I think that is the one. That is the place that he is most likely to show up.
Because James Gunn has refuted all claims that Thanos is in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and his movie has nothing to do with the Avengers.
Yeah. So I'm gonna keep James at his word for right now. I reserve the right to call James a bloody liar after May, but I'm going to hold him to his word right now. So
you can't call him much of a bloody liar. I mean, the man did create Baby Groot.
Look, the Guardians was on again the other night. I stopped. I watched it. My little girl walked in. She stopped and she watched it. And at that point, she was like, "I want to see the trailer for 2 again." And I put the trailer for 2 on, and there was a lot of awes at Baby Groot. I put a playlist on today, Come and Get Your Love came on, and that playlist proceeded to stop right there and press me on repeat. So James Gunn can do, he's okay with me. He can have this lie. I'm not saying he can't have the lie, but I will call him a liar when it happens.
All right. So let's move on to the world of Fox. So Deadpool, actively being campaigned for award season, gets writers for awards for the real heroes, the writers.
I mean, the movie, the beginning of the movie tells you exactly what they think of these guys. They trashed everyone else, and then they got to the writers and it's like, the real heroes. So, of course, I don't think that was like, I mean, it was a joke, it was a gag, but I think that's how people really felt about this. Like, if we don't have these two, none of this is here. So they're pushing them for the award. I say good on them. I don't know what they're going up against. I don't think they're going to win, but it's just nice to have them.
Hey, I mean, he does say that Logan's probably going to break that glass ceiling for Oscars 2018.
Okay. See, I know we've seen the movie. I know people have seen the first 40 minutes. I understand all of that. However, we have a track record of these Wolverine movies and movies with Wolverine in them, and X-Men Origins, they were saying this is going to be the Batman Begins of Wolverine, and this dude got shot in the head and forgot everything. That is the least offensive thing that happened in that movie. Though Wolverine is like, no, we're going to fix all the things we made wrong with the other one. This is going to be dark and gritty. This is going to be an adult Wolverine. And you know what? For 30 minutes, it was. How many minutes did these people see of Logan? About 40? Oh, that's about right. And then after that, it falls off of the train he was jumping on in the movie. So,
you mean you're not a fan of the Silver Ninja and ripping people's hearts out?
That was so stupid. And then he cuts off his claws and like sucking the bone marrow out so he can turn young. It's just dumb. Just so dumb. And I'm not even going to get into the fact that he cut off his adamantium claws. Wolverine left there with bone claws. The next movie we saw Wolverine in, he's got not just adamantium claws, but the best set of adamantium claws we've seen him with so far in these movies. Just stop it, Fox. I'm giving Logan the chance. But do I think it's going to break the ceiling? No. If I'm judging just on the trailer alone, okay, I can see that's an Oscar-baity trailer, but it's a trailer. Again, you've given me good Wolverine trailers before, and oh, the dump you took with these movies.
So speaking of the dump that they take with X-Men movies, they're talking about New Mutants, Josh Boone, going to be up in Canada, going to start filming in March, saying, you know, there's a possibility McAvoy could come back. I mean, you know, Professor X is definitely a part of that New Mutants story, so why not have him be the leader of the New Mutants?
So, in the comic, just the comic is just straight up New Mutants, and yet Charles does have this new set of mutants, and he is involved. It is at his school, and that's fine for the comics, because in the comics there's a delineation between New Mutants and X-Men. This movie is going to be called X-Men: The New Mutants. X-Men: The New Mutants. And from a marketing standpoint, I get it. I understand. X-Men is your brand, and you wanted to draw people in the seats, particularly with this cast of mutants. However, by calling it, the movies don't have the benefit that the comics have, that people can separate that the New Mutants and the X-Men are not the same team. When people go to the movies, they're going to see X-Men, and they're going to say, "Oh, so this is another version of the same team," and then you're going to further cement that by having Xavier in it. So, like, I have nothing against McAvoy; I liked him as Professor X, but for this movie, I think it's just going to reinforce what they already think about X-Men movies, and I think this movie can be different, but the gift and the curse of the X-Men name is going to be
what. So you don't believe, as I believe, that the fact that he is connective tissue is going to help people transition and process this in a easier way? Because, I mean, we all get onto him and blast him for continuity. So, like, having McAvoy there sets it firmly in this timeline where it's set after the events of Apocalypse, which is easier for me to follow than, okay, we're going to go back to 1962 with Charles and Raven
Magneto.
And, you know, we're going to do that. But we're going to lead to a point where we're still getting to that same point in 2000 where they're fighting the new mutant registration act. Yet they're going to be responsible for the Cuban Missile Crisis. We're going to jump ahead and do Sentinels, because God knows we couldn't do Sentinels back in X2. So we're going to do these again, and then that's going to alter the entire timeline and erase all the movies that came before. And now we're going to start fresh. And now we're going to do Apocalypse and be all 80s and weird. And Jean Grey is going to touch the face of a near naked Wolverine and have a tender moment of passion. So, like, the timeline, the continuity, and young Nightcrawler and young Storm, which doesn't match up with the age of Halle Berry in 2000, and Ben's in the river and all of that we've had that conversation a million times, I think it will sincerely help if they do a succinct, this movie is set after the events of X-Men Apocalypse. McAvoy's Xavier is in the movie. He is bald. He is just mentoring these kids at this school.
Okay, so you say continuity, you say timeline. Two of the things that Fox is like set on fire. They're just like, these things
matter not to us.
So if we just go, okay, in theory, I agree with what you're saying, but off of the last movie, basically the last movie was Charles gathering a bunch of young mutants that would be the new mutants, and they took on Apocalypse.
But so, Storm is going to be in this movie.
They did say Storm would be in there. So, see, that connects it, but then it's like, well, what happened to Scott And Jean Grey.
And you can use a throwaway line of dialogue to say that they're off somewhere doing something.
Okay. Now that brings me to the thing that... So that means this movie is set in the goddamn 90s. So we're going to have another period piece movie with these suckers.
Oh, when did they say that Apocalypse was set? 82, 83, 84?
Yeah. So it's either late 80s or early 90s.
Well, when did Return of the Jedi come out?
83.
So it's set in 1983, because they walk out of the mall seen Return of the Jedi. So you could, in theory, set this movie in 87 or 88. And that's still an late 80s time period.
So, this doesn't affect me as much, but right now, your cash cows for X-Men are Wolverine.
In Deadpool. Deadpool's set in the present.
Yeah, you're getting rid of Wolverine. You need to get him to your other cash cow, which is Deadpool. And then at this point, that's 30 years apart.
Yeah, which is kind of it kind of hinders the fact that we want a Deadpool-Wolverine movie with Jackman, which... Timing may be a little bit off on that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only one you can do because Jackman, he's actually grown. I think he looks better as Wolverine now than he did when he started. And he can be in the present and do this stuff, even though Logan takes place in the freaking future again.
2024.
Again, dumb. But these kids, they could have just... One, they could have just fixed this with Days of Future Past, and they chose not to. Two, they could have fixed this with Apocalypse and just go full on cheat and beat Apocalypse and send them suckers to the future. You got your new cast, everybody's in the future, and once they've accepted that you set the timeline on fire already, why won't they accept you just throwing them all in the future and be like, here, they're here now, and just live with that? You solve almost all of your problems, except, it makes no sense. But you don't care about that anyway. So you solve all the rest of your problems, except for it makes sense.
I mean, it's an interesting way to go, for sure. And we'll be interested to see as production ramps up on that. So Chad, we started this podcast by talking about Star Wars. I think it's only appropriate that we end our conversation this evening talking about Star Wars. Chad, why on God's green earth does Han Solo need a mentor to show him how to be young Han Solo?
I mean...
Could he not have been just naturally born that charismatic? Could he not have just been born a snarky a-hole? Did he have to learn how to be a snarky a-hole from Woody Harrelson? Or Christian Bale?
So, but Christian Bale's another name?
No, yeah, Christian Bale's another name. Though I think he's already passed on.
Yeah, I think he should. I'll ask you this. So before you saw a prequel or anything, when you watch the original episode 4 and Obi-Wan is talking about him and Anakin and how he was trained by Yoda and him and Anakin were basically like peers and all this other stuff, did you think Obi-Wan had a mentor that in turn found Anakin and then all this other crap happened?
No.
We didn't know. We thought Obi-Wan found Anakin. He brought him up. They became pals. Yoda taught him. End of story. Bing, bam, boom. Done.
Yoda did technically train Obi-Wan as a youngling.
His master was friend Qui-Gon. He had to have a mentor. Mm-hmm. He got Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon. So this is in that vein. Does Han Solo need a mentor to show him that he's cool and all this stuff? Yeah. But... You know, they're going to use it as this plot device and whatever, but...
Plot device. So the mentor has to die and inspire him to go take the castle run?
Now, that's the thing with this, because he...
Could this possibly be Revenge of the Nerds 3, where we have the contest between the jocks and the geeks to just declare decide the presidency of the universe?
I've seen that one, but it was a long, long time ago. But, so everybody else that has a mentor, when the mentor dies, it inspires them to go on and do these greater things. When we meet Han Solo, the first thing he does is shoot some dude in the face.
Yeah, correction. Well, yes, he shot first now.
Yeah, and I don't care what you were about to say, that does not happen. Like, when I watch it on the Blu-rays that I'm forced to watch, in my mind...
Hey, Gareth did say that they are sitting on a 4K restoration and did not confirm nor deny that that 4K restoration is in the original. Like, in the original 1977 edit.
Look, I just want... Just give me the original New Hope.
The original edits.
Give me the original edit.
I shouldn't have to go to eBay and pay millions of dollars for a Laserdisc.
If you've got to appease George somewhat, you can keep the edited Empire Strikes Back. I don't care about that one. That one, all you did was open up Cloud City. That makes sense to me. It's non-offensive. Everything is fine. But New Hope, and you know what part in Return of the Jedi that I'm not going to say again, because I say it all the time.
The dancing Ewoks?
No, you're not going to make me say it. I'm not saying it. You already know what it is. You get rid of that part, I'm fine. Fine. But now we've rambled all the way down here and I forgot what I was saying. The dying mentor inspires you to be a hero, but Han Solo is... His whole appeal is that he's a scoundrel and...
Like, that's my whole deal. Like, he you know, this fogey old religion, right? That's how he starts out. Like, why does it have to be that someone had to teach him how to be a cocky cargo pilot? Why couldn't he have had a rough life growing up and just ended up in that trade of life? I mean, I do not need to see a man walking around in a shirt, a black shirt with a V-neck kind of cut there, and then all of a sudden this guy gives him a vest and he becomes Han Solo. Like, I don't need that. I know Lord and Miller are more capable than that.
Like, if... So, if he's... Since we've talked about Guardians, if he's like Yondu in Guardians, he's like a person that Peter looks up to, and he's been around the whole time. But
I he's not threatening to eat him or feed him to people.
He's protecting him. I wouldn't necessarily call him a mentor, and he's not inspired by him to do like anything good. If it's in that vein, that works. But if it's like the purity. This is the guy I'm hanging with because he showed me
the ropes. Here, kid, kind of let me show you the ropes.
Yeah, that kind of thing, no.
And this also goes to where we are talking about. If I'm going to do this movie, I do it about Jabba and Boba Fett. And I do this movie about Jabba and Boba Fett and the way that Han interacted with them and why Jabba is so mad at Han at the beginning of A New Hope. I do that story. I don't, or I do how Lando and Han became friends and how he lost the Millennium Falcon and came into possession of it and how he met Chewbacca and those stories. I don't need the story of a young scrappy kid who learns how to make snarky comments and win over princesses.
No, I don't want it to be that. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully it goes into the latter round.
This has a whole bunch of question marks with it.
Oh.
Like, there are more question marks with this than Rogue One. Because Rogue One, you can put out a movie, everybody dies. Although Gareth said they had conversations at one point about, well, what happens if not everybody dies?
I don't know why they had those conversations.
But, like, that's not, there's nothing controversial about that. You're not changing canon at all. You're making it maybe not line up as seamlessly with Episode 4's beginning, but you're not changing canon at all. The opening crawl of A New Hope blatantly says that they have just won their first major military victory and that rebels, spies, acquired the plans for the Death Star. So, you know, this is the story of those rebel spies. There's nothing controversial about that. Hell, I'm even sure some author at some point down the line in the old expanded universe canon told a story about how the Death Star plans ended up in Princess Leia's possession at the beginning of A New Hope. But, I mean, the young Han Solo movie is just so riddled with things I don't need to know. And I just keep going down this path of, oh my god, Boba Fett in the original trilogy. Okay, so I get this character who's on screen in the original trilogy for a total of maybe 15 minutes, and he's a ultimate aura of man, the man with no name. It's that ultimate persona of you can apply whatever backstory you have in your head to this guy and why he hates Han Solo and why he is so determined to crisscross the galaxy to get Solo. And then I get a prequel trilogy that tells me, well, actually, the guy who won the genetic lottery and was selected by these really weird alien creatures to be the basis for their clones that they were producing for the Empire or the Republic at that time, decided, wait, I will not give you my DNA or my semen unless you give me a replicant of my own that has a slower growth rate. And so that's how Boba Fett came to be. And then Boba Fett was a little kid, and he was pouty and whiny and looked at his dad. And then he watched his dad die and get beheaded by Mace Windu.
Yeah.
And then he cradled his father's head and then went off into the sunset. And then didn't show up again until 28 years later in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I didn't need that backstory. I didn't need to know that he was a whiny little brat who cradled his father's head in his hands. I don't need to know that Han Solo learned how to be Han Solo from a drunken Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
I don't need him to get a vest from Woody Harrelson.
No, I don't need him to get that either.
Well, I mean, I have faith and trust in because by all accounts, 21 Jump Street shouldn't work. By all accounts, 22 Jump Street shouldn't work. By all accounts, the Lego movie should not work. Yeah, they all work, and they all work beautifully, and they're all awesome. But this is not a story I need told. And it's gonna come off the heels of episode 8, which is gonna make as much money now, I believe, as episode 7.
Whew.
I mean, again, we just got a movie with like a Skywalker with a lightsaber in it for a minute and a half, and it's gonna make possibly $480 million domestically.
This is true.
If you give them the Further Adventures of Rey, Pin and Poe, Rey, Poe and Finn, you're going to get those kinds of numbers because you're going to have an International Star Wars Day and people are going to go to the theaters and they're going to watch it and movie other studios are going to vacate December to them. Poor Jumanji. But, I mean, it's going to be coming off of 8 and I just think that this is not a smart way to spend capital. It's not a smart way to spend capital. It's not a smart way to spend time. And also, with a three-picture deal, I mean, where are you going on a three-picture deal with a young Han Solo? You're going to do a trilogy?
Hopefully not.
I mean, there's not enough story there to do a trilogy. Unless you're just going to start spinning yawns out of complete fiction.
Oh, they will.
Some people complain about, you know, fan fiction. But, I mean, I don't think they're either one of these films that we've gotten from Disney are fan fiction or anything close.
No. No.
So, I mean, I just think it's an odd choice, that's all. And I just think it's, like, you don't need a mentor to teach Han Solo how to be Han Solo.
I would agree with that. However, I will say, if you're going to have to pick a mentor...
Woody Harrelson, yeah, I mean, he's already done it once in Hunger Games, yeah. So... All right, Chad. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow me on Twitter at BCWTigerFan.
At the Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a happy and blessed 2016-17.